Hello, this is Terry Burdick with the weekend edition of the Vermilion County Commercial News for Saturday and Sunday, November 16th and 17th. We'll start on the first page this morning with the headline, Lorenzo Skinner named Actor of the Year. Illinois Top 5 selects young local actor in haunted house competition by Kayla White from the Danville Commercial News. Danville native and actor Lorenzo Skinner was recently named Actor of the Year by Illinois Top 5, a family-owned review team that reviews haunted attraction actors and venues throughout the state of Illinois. Skinner, an 18-year-old who's been acting in local theater productions since he was a child, was chosen by the team at Illinois Top 5 because of his unique approach, according to Kyler Gunther. While most actors at haunted attractions aim to act in a traditionally scary way, Skinner took a different approach. He acted like a crazy person you'd see on the side of the road, like he was drunk. The customers acted like he was a real person, so they would be afraid of, Gunther said. Even more remarkable, according to Gunther, was the fact that Skinner had only developed the character he was playing 28 minutes before opening. He was just so comfortable playing the role of Clarence. And he only just came up with it. I had never seen anything like that, Gunther said. Skinner has always been fascinated by the macabre, he said, and leapt at the chance to move into the haunted attraction sector. In 2022, at a horror convention in Champaign, there were some of the actors from Baldwin Asylum, and my brother and I were in costume, so they asked if we wanted to come to the auditions for the season, Skinner said. He and his brother were both chosen to act at Baldwin for the season before being given the opportunity to act in a holiday event in Chicago that year. That opportunity in Chicago led to a series of such events throughout the region, including Eloise Asylum in Peoria and several others as far away as Michigan. Despite the terrifying aura, Skinner says his favorite aspect of working in the haunted attraction industry is the people who take part. My favorite part is definitely the community. If it wasn't for the people up there, I wouldn't be making the 3-hour drive. Everyone is extremely welcoming, Skinner said. One of my biggest fears starting was not fitting in, and it's a band of misfits, and everyone is drawn together by a similar interest, Skinner said. It's quite empowering, the actual acting aspect of it. Aside from acting, Skinner also says he has a lot of passion projects he's exploring, including Dead End Productions, a small business selling masks he makes. I'm really passionate towards all the masks that I've been making and props, Skinner said. For one particular convention, Midwest Haunters Con, which took place in June of this year, Skinner collaborated with costume designer Brandy Beast Morris to create a full haunted pirate costume. She had made the mask and chest piece, and I had done the costume and the distressing, Lorenzo said about the look. We do plan on doing some collaborations in the future. When Skinner was chosen for Actor of the Year, he was working the queue line outside a haunted house. I was working a queue line position, which for my first season at a new haunt is in my mind a big accomplishment, Skinner said. It's a larger position than just working inside the house. On the outside, it's more interactive based, where you can have longer interactions with people and it's more entertainment than strictly scare. So a lot of dialogue and just different routines and different bits that play out. As for the future, Skinner says he sees haunted attraction acting as a stepping stone to bigger and better opportunities. It's something that I'd like to stick with and continue to do for as long as I can, but I really would like to prioritize the business aspect of the community. They're big trade shows, Skinner says, referencing several, such as the East Coast Haunters and Fear Expo. He's particularly grateful for the chance to learn from others in the community. There is a wealth of knowledge for what I'm trying to learn, which is the fabrication and manufacturing of different props and special effects, Skinner said. Continuing on the first page, alumni included for the 50th annual Madrigals Dinner, again by Kayla White. Nothing says holiday spirit like holiday music, and Danville High School's Madrigals Dinner is always a great start to the season. But this year's 50th annual dinner will feature more voices than ever before. Many more. My plan is to fill the entire St. James Sanctuary with Madrigal singers from the last 50 years, Director Jeff Thomas said. I've been in contact with over 100 alumni singers, and our current 27 singers from this current year will be joining them as well. Two former directors will also be in the attendance, the first to direct the group when it first began in 1974, and will help conduct the group alongside Thomas. We've got singers from every generation coming, so it's going to be quite the sight to see, Thomas said. The Madrigals group at DHS got started after the show choir group back then, the Contemporaries, attended a musical conference and saw another show choir performing madrigals, a cappella songs that date back to the 1400s. They were inspired, and they they loved it. And they were like, this is something we could do in our community. So they came back after seeing that, and they started up that year, Thomas said. The kids loved it. The town loved it. And then we never stopped. This year's dinner will be catered by Hickory River. Guests can look forward to enjoying a 5-course meal with a full smoked chicken, as well as wassail, a centuries-old traditional hot apple cider type drink, spiced with cinnamon, nutmeg, and cloves. Though the event will be entertaining and delicious by all accounts, Thomas also sees it as a learning experience for the students. It's mostly to show these kids that there's some versatility. It's a nice way for kids to be able to get a well-rounded music education, Thomas says. I think it's important as a teacher as well that we're not just singing pop and rock songs from the last 30 years. I want them to see they can do all this classical singing as well. All in all, it's great for the community. I think a lot of families have been coming back, and it's how they start their Christmas season every year. So it's really nice to see those same faces in the crowd every year, Thomas said. Tickets are selling fast, so community members are encouraged to get their tickets as early as possible. Tickets are $30 for individual tickets or $200 for a table of eight. They can be purchased on the group's website at danvillechoirs.org. The 50th annual Madrigals Dinner will be held at St. James United Methodist Church December 3 through 5. Pre-show begins at 5:30 and the show begins at 6. What a great way to start your holiday season. Continuing with community events, let's take a look at our community briefs. Danville Public Library hosting Writers Club. In celebration of National Novel Writing Month, Danville Public Library is hosting a Writers Club every Saturday in November. Meet in their Star Books bookstore from 10 to 11 a.m. for coffee, chats, networking, and more. Those interested in a breakout group/accountability writing session can then work until 1 p.m. The first 10 participants will receive a complimentary writing journal. Every November, writers around the world work to write 50,000 words of a novel in 30 days. Valuing enthusiasm, determination, and a deadline, NaNoWriMo is for anyone who has ever thought about writing a novel. Join us, says nanowrimo.org. Liberty Village, no, that was on Friday. I'm sorry we missed that all. MLKCC accepting scholarship applications. The Martin Luther King Jr. Celebration Committee is accepting applications for the MLK scholarship. To be eligible for the $6,000 scholarship, one must be a senior at a local high school who plans to pursue his or her education at an institution of higher learning. Applications are available at the local high schools and at the City of Danville Human Relations Department. All applications must be submitted to the Human Relations Department by 4:30 on December 6th. The Sweet Adelines to host a luncheon and silent auction. Celebrate with the Danville Sweet Adelines and Santa on Saturday, December 7th for their Countdown to Christmas Luncheon and Silent Auction at Bremer Center on the campus of Danville Area Community College. Doors open at 11 a.m. Wear your favorite holiday wear as we eat, sing, and get merry. Call 217-474-0473 for reservations. Proceeds benefit the Humane Society of Danville. Wreaths Across America is requesting fundraising help. With just under a month to go to collect donations, Wreaths Across America has collected 300 wreaths of the 12,000 needed to decorate the graves of those interred at Danville National Cemetery. The organization requests fundraising assistance from the public. The cutoff for raising funds is Thanksgiving weekend. They'll hold their official ceremony at 11 a.m. on December 14th. The guest speaker will be Representative Brandon Schweizer, along with Master of Ceremonies Scott Eisenhower and Senator Paul Faraci. This is a coordinating event with other cemeteries across the country and world. For more information, visit wreathsacrossamerica.org or contact Tammy or Keith Williams at 217-516-2354. Also in happenings across our community, the Danville Birth Project is hosting a documentary showing at Fisher. The Danville Birth Project, a nonprofit organization dedicated to supporting families through pregnancy, birth, and early parenting, will be hosting a special screening of the documentary Born Free, Birth in America at 6 p.m. on December 12th at the historic Fisher Theater in Danville. After the screening, a panel discussion featuring local experts and community leaders will explore the film's themes and how they relate to the mission of the Danville Birth Project and the unique challenges faced by Vermilion County regarding maternal health. The DBP encourages community members, healthcare providers, and families to attend this insightful event as we work together to foster a supportive environment for maternal health in our region. The Danville Birth Project is a 501(c) nonprofit committed to enhancing the health of mothers and babies in Vermilion County through education, support, and advocacy. Their programs are designed to empower families with the knowledge and resources they need to thrive during the crucial early stages of parenthood. For more information about their programs, events, and ways to get involved, visit their website at www.danvillebirthproject.com or contact them at danvillebirthproject@gmail.com. Oh, there is one more event that we need to get on our calendars. Downtown Danville hosts Nights of Lights, horse-drawn carriages, visits with Santa, and winter parade among the festivities. Get ready to immerse yourself into the holiday spirit on December 6th at the Night of Lights Parade in downtown Danville. The festivities begin with a free horse-drawn carriage ride from 1 to 5 at the corner of Harrison and Vermilion Street, the perfect way to start your holiday adventure, sponsored by the Vermilion County Conservation Foundation. Be sure to stop by Temple Plaza to meet the Jolly Man himself, Santa Claus. At 6 p.m., the real enchantment begins as we gather along North Vermilion Street for the Night of Lights Parade, themed North Pole Magic. It's sure to be a spectacular sight, filled with dazzling floats and twinkling lights. Want to be part of the magic? Register your float at www.signupgenius.com. The parade will journey south down Vermilion Street, starting at Williams and ending at Town Center. Grab a cozy spot along the route and enjoy the festival atmosphere as the streets light up with holiday cheer. No candy is thrown during this parade for safety reasons. For the full experience, head over to the Fisher Marquee, where parade announcements will take place and tasty concessions will be available to keep you fueled for the fun. For the safety of those attending, there will be road closures along Walnut Street from 3:30 to 7 and along North Vermilion Street from 5:30 to 8. Please seek an alternative route during these times. If you have any questions or concerns, please contact Kaylin Bryant, Community Relations Coordinator, at 217-431-2317 or cbryant, that's C-B-R-Y-A-N-T, at cityofdanville.org. Turning our attention to other things going on in our surrounding communities, Dog Saves Family from Garage Fire by Caleb Amick. Shirley, Indiana, Jennifer Stewart rose from bed in the wee hours of the morning on October 10th to feed her newborn baby and listened with concern as her dog Pepper began barking urgently. Pepper's a German Shepherd Great Pyrenees mix who rarely barks, thanks to her bark collar. However, this morning was different. What is she barking at? Jennifer wondered. She and her boyfriend Patrick searched the house to no avail. There was no sign of anything until the smoke alarm started beeping. Patrick opened the garage door to find the garage area enveloped in smoke, which quickly filled the home. Jennifer grabbed her family and evacuated as first responders showed up. Apparently frightened by first responders, Pepper ran from the area but soon reappeared. The family dog may just have saved the homeowners and their infant child, Avery. The Middletown Police Department posted on its Facebook page the day after the fire. All three occupants and the dog were able to escape the residence before it became fully engulfed in flames. The dog literally saved our lights, Patrick said. Everything from Jennifer's family mementos to at least one of their cars was lost in the fire, leaving her in shock. It's absolutely insane to think that I'm 41 years old and everything I've ever had in my life is totally gone, she said. We couldn't have saved anything. The fire melted copper, so it was like 2,000 degrees at the least. The extensive damage left Jennifer wondering how the fire started, considering the way the home had been built. I had it built in 2005, she said. It wasn't an old house. There wasn't any old stuff in there. Everything should have been fire retardant. Despite the damage and loss, there was hope. Support flowed in almost immediately after news of the fire broke. Jennifer and Patrick received donations of money, clothes, and other items. They were sorting through items in the hotel room they were staying in during a recent interview. Pepper was not with them. She was staying with other family members. Jennifer credited Rachel Fridley, who serves on the Cadiz Fire Department with her husband, with helping out. Fridley was home with her two daughters when the fire happened. The following day, she approached Jennifer, who was searching through the rubble for any viable belongings, and asked her, "Is there anything you need?" I had a whole bunch of my friends and people I didn't know. They just came together and brought a whole pile of things. Fridley knows how devastating a house fire can be. She and her family were victims in 2016. She and her siblings lost all their clothing and their Immunity stepped in to help. She decided to do the same for Jennifer and her family. She recently contacted Jennifer to check on her and her family. They're still living in a hotel room, but will move into a rental home in Pendleton near the end of the month. And of course, they will bring Pepper with them. Follow Caleb Amick on Twitter at AmickCaleb and contact him at 765-648-4254. As we've reached the midpoint of our time together today, we'll take a look at our death notices. These obituaries were received by 5 o'clock on Friday. From Danville, Mary Bartlow. Mary Bartlow passed away at 4:55 p.m. on November 11th in Peoria. Her visitation will be from 5 to 7 p.m. on Wednesday, November 20th at Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center in Danville. The service will be at 10 a.m. on Thursday, November 21st at the funeral home with Miles Clark officiating. Burial will be at Resurrection Cemetery. Donald Carl Swearingen, 83, passed away on November 11th at OSF Heart and Mary Hospital in Danville. Visitation will be from 3 to 5 p.m. on November 17th at Vermilion Valley Vineyard Church, with a service at 10 a.m. on November 18th at the Danville VA Cemetery. From Hoopston, Charlotte Lorraine Marco, 98, passed away at 11:45 a.m. on November 7th at Autumn Fields Adult Community in Hoopston. Her graveside service will be at 1 p.m. on Saturday, November 23rd at Flora Hill Cemetery in Hoopston with Pastor Micah Mobley officiating. And we also had a death notice of Imogen Peyton Robinson, formerly of Danville, who passed away on October 16th in Hoover, Alabama. No other details were provided. Let's take a look at what's going on around our state. Illinois Democrats brace for second Trump administration. Leaders ponder options ahead of the January 20th inauguration by Peter Hancock from the Capital News Illinois. During Donald Trump's first term as president, Governor J.B. Pritzker and Democrats in the Illinois General Assembly spent much of their time enacting laws and policies in direct opposition to the conservative agenda they saw coming from the White House. Those included the 2019 Reproductive Health Act that declared abortion access to be a fundamental right under state law, which lawmakers passed in anticipation that a conservative Supreme Court would eventually overturn Roe v. Wade. It also included numerous head-to-head confrontations with the Trump administration during the COVID-19 pandemic, when Pritzker was ordering public health measures aimed at preventing the spread of the disease while openly criticizing Trump for refusing to do the same. Now, as Trump prepares to take office again, Pritzker and Democratic leaders are bracing themselves for another round of conflict with the White House while planning for legislation and policies to blunt the potential impact of a second Trump administration. Over the years ahead, we'll do more than just protect against the possible reversion to an agenda that threatens to take us backwards, Pritzker said at November 7 post-election news conference. We'll continue to advance a positive, productive, and inclusive agenda of our own, one that brings opportunity to Illinois and helps uplift the nation as a whole. On Wednesday, Pritzker and Colorado Governor Jerry Polis, also a Democrat, announced the formation of Governors Safeguarding Democracy, a coalition they say will focus on protecting against the dangers of authoritarianism and the undermining of state-level institutions. That announcement came as lawmakers were convening at the State House for the start of their scheduled two-week fall veto session. Speaking with reporters Wednesday, Pritzker said he does not yet have a list of specific measures he wants lawmakers to consider immediately, but that some sort of action could come as early as January before Trump is sworn into office. I haven't heard anything that has to be addressed right now during this veto session, he said. Having said that, there is time to be able to do that before the January 20th inauguration. Likewise, House Speaker Emanuel Chris Welch, Democrat from Hillside, said Tuesday, the opening day of the veto session, that it was still too early to know exactly what Trump plans to do in the first few days or how the state should respond. But he said Trump's record during his first term in office, as well as statements he made during the campaign, offer clues about some of the issues that will be important in Illinois. We have to be prepared to continue to defend our values as Illinoisans and do the things that we know how to do to protect workers, protect women, protect LGBTQ+ communities, immigrant communities, Welch said. Welch also pointed to some of the early moves Trump has made since winning the election as signals about the issues Illinois lawmakers will confront. Those include promises to launch mass deportations of immigrants, suggestions from advisors about eliminating federal employee labor unions, and the naming of former Republican Representative Lee Zeldin to head the Environmental Protection Agency. He appointed a former congressman to be head of the EPA who has a 14% record on good environmental legislation, Welch said. "We have to be concerned about immigration. This country was made and built on immigration. We have to be concerned with workers' rights." Legislative Republicans, meanwhile, argued that Trump won the election because voters were more concerned about bread-and-butter issues like inflation and the economy. Citing a recent report stating the state facing a potential $3.2 billion budget deficit in the upcoming fiscal year, GOP leaders said Illinois would be greater served if Democrats who control the General Assembly focused more on the state's own financial condition and less on drawing battle lines with the Trump administration. Voters throughout this country have sent a clear message in the last election that they wanted elected officials to focus on making life more affordable for American families, Senate Republican leader John Curran of Downers Grove said during a news conference on Tuesday. He said that the task will be more challenging in Illinois due to the impending deficit. "This budget deficit really is a product of Governor Pritzker and his allies' year-over-year gluttonous appetite for more spending," Curran said. While Democrats have said they are prepared to tackle the deficit, they didn't give specifics. Senator L.G. Sims, a Democrat from Chicago who spearheads the budget process in the Senate, told Capital News Illinois this week there haven't been any discussions of raising taxes. Welch acknowledged that Trump will come into office in January with more of a mandate than he had after the 2016 election, when he won a majority of electoral votes but lost the popular vote to Democrat Hillary Clinton. "The American people did speak, and if you believe in democracy, you have to accept the results of the election," he said. "But we didn't elect a dictator. We elected a president of the United States who has to follow the Constitution of the United States. That Constitution respects people's fundamental freedoms. That Constitution protects individual rights. That Constitution protects everyone across this country, not just some people, and we have to make sure that he doesn't go too far." Capital News Illinois is a nonprofit, nonpartisan news service that distributes state government coverage to hundreds of news outlets statewide. In other area news, Illinois Chancellor is stepping down. This story is from the Associated Press. University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign Chancellor Robert Jones plans to resign at the end of the academic year. University officials made the announcement Wednesday. University of Illinois System President Tim Colleen said Jones will stay on until June 30th, and the university hopes to hire his replacement by July 1st. Jones is considering an offer to remain employed in the U of I system in some capacity, Colleen said. Jones has served as chancellor since 2016. He's the school's first black chancellor and led the university through the COVID-19 pandemic. Enrollment at Urbana-Champaign has increased 26% during his tenure, according to university officials. The school also launched the Illinois Commitment Program under his leadership in 2018. The program provides 4 years of free tuition for any Illinois resident whose family income is less than $75,000. "My time in Illinois has been the most profound experience of my professional life, and I thank every single campus community member for that," Jones said in a news release. "We are at the high point in our 157-year history in terms of our educational and research impact. Next is a period of transition with our institutional strategy and collaborations. This is an appropriate time to look toward the next leader who will build on that momentum and promote the bold ideas for which Illinois is known." In other area news, "He's Still Just Richard" by Sue Laughlin of CNHI News, Indiana. "Winning America's Got Talent is a life-changing experience," said Richard Goodall, Terre Haute's celebrated singing janitor. "Wherever he goes, he's asked to give autographs and pose for selfies, and he graciously agrees. He'll be flying to California twice over the holidays for some performances, including one in which he'll open for Howie Mandel, a comedian and judge on America's Got Talent. He also has a concert in Pennsylvania in January. It will be with the Las Vegas Tribute Band. Goodall works with a manager and booking agent. I'm learning the business side of all this," he said, and he anticipates more bookings next year, particularly as the weather gets warmer. "But success hasn't changed him," he said. "I'm basically the exact same guy." And the 55-year-old wants it to stay that way. "He doesn't ever want to come across as snooty or self-important. I'm just Richard. I got lucky enough to be on TV. I sang a few songs, and I won the prize. I'm basically the exact same guy." As he sees it, you don't choose TV. TV chooses you. It's the absolute truth. There is an element of talent, an element of luck, and an element you have to have a good story, he said. In day-to-day life, he's still a custodian at West Vigo Middle School for the foreseeable future. He and wife Angie have purchased a home and will soon start moving in. He's dealt with some health issues, including surgery for a hernia, as well as major dental work. While he's benefiting financially from his AGT success, we're not at a place where we're making really good headway financially, he said. But Goodall anticipates bigger things in store next year. Among some of his appearances, he sang the national anthem and gave a halftime performance at the Indiana State University men's basketball game on November 7th. The crowd loved it. On Sunday, he sang the national anthem at an Indiana Pacers game in which the Pacers played the Miami Heat. The weekend of November 23rd, he's headed to Riverside, California, where he'll be a guest performer as part of the Festival of Lights at the Mission Inn Hotel and Spa. On December 28th, he'll open for Howie Mandel in the Fantasy Springs Resort Casino in Indio, California, near Palm Desert. In Vigo County, he's been visiting several schools. He's also done some free or next to free performances, but his manager has advised him to be careful and set limits since there are many requests to try and keep up with. Life post-AGT and the opportunities ahead are all exciting, Goodall said. There was really no letdown after he won the top award, but he does admit he was disappointed he never got to meet Steve Perry, the former lead singer of Journey. I thought he might come by and say hi, Goodall said. It was the Journey song, Don't Stop Believin', that first made Goodall a social media sensation in 2022 after he was recorded singing the song during a year-end program at Davis Park Elementary, a TikTok video that received millions of views. Goodall, who sounds like Perry, even got a social media shout-out from Perry. On Monday, Goodall said he and Angie watched some of the America's Got Talent videos that morning and reminisced. Sometimes I just have to pinch myself, he said. He knows his fame and celebrity won't last forever. I'm smart enough to know it won't always be this way, he said. And he's thinking about what the longer-term future might look like, including the possibility of a book and potentially motivational speaking. If you've listened to me read the news before, you'll know that I really enjoy Kevin Collins, the Irish hiker, column each week. So we'll start to wrap up our time together by looking at his article, Reminiscing the Joys of Boyhood. Our wonderful neighbors, Sam and Kristen, love yard work. If they're not planting something, they're mowing grass, trimming bushes, killing weeds, pruning trees, or raking leaves. Lots and lots of leaves. The other day, they formed two leaf piles, each roughly 5 feet high, at the curb awaiting removal. A day or two later, we spotted a little boy, maybe 6 years, coming down the street. As soon as he saw those nice, dry, crunchy leaves, he launched himself like Batman into one of the piles. For a moment, he vanished, then emerged, thrashing about, all smiles. Ah, the reckless, fun-filled, wildcat joys of boyhood. It was a treat to watch. Been there, done that. It got me thinking about growing up way back when parents pretty much let their children roam freely with no adult contact or interference. I didn't appreciate it then, but looking back, it was the life of kings, well, of princes anyway. Boy 7 falls from second story, read the commercial news headline in the fall of 1962. The boy was my kid brother Pat. We were both playing on the rotting frame of a house at the end of Shaw Street that someone had started, then abandoned. Result? A jungle gym like no other. The accident occurred in an old neighborhood building, the CN reported the next day. Pat whacked his head and required 4 stitches at Lakeview Memorial Hospital. The fall, however, was cushioned, as Patrick landed on his brother Kevin, 8, who was playing on the ground level, the story said. Kevin received only a bruise and did not require treatment. 50 years later, I often remind Pat that I had once saved his life. You didn't cushion my fall, he'd say. Well, a professional journalist said I did, I'd reply. Well, you're a professional journalist, too, and that don't mean crap, was his ready response. Although I didn't admit it at the time, it was only fitting that Pat was the one to be rushed to the hospital. 2 years before, he'd shoved me down a neighbor's sloping hillside backwards, a hillside reinforced with hunks of limestone. That time I was the one heading to the hospital for stitches to the scalp. And the year before that, the web of my right hand between my thumb and index finger was accidentally slashed by Pat when I was nice enough to hand him a steak knife handle first. Again, stitches. The same year, while chasing Pat, I fell on a broken pop bottle. 23 stitches later, I was back in action. Of course, those unbridled days of boyhood didn't always mean bloody injuries. Usually they involved resourcefulness, adventure, and fun with friends who were equally unbridled. Edison School in Westville had a big playground covered with gritty cinders from the coal furnace. Every boy had a bag of marbles. We all did our best to deprive classmates of Crockies, Steelies, and Moonies. And the teeter-totters, merry-go-rounds, and swing sets were old, made of steel and wood, and nothing would ever pass safety inspections today. Well, we're going to have to stop the article there as we run out of time together. This has been Terry Burdick reading to you from the weekend edition of the Vermilion County Commercial News, Saturday and Sunday, November 16th and 17th. Have a great day.